Well, in a world where we're connected to our smartphones, which are connected to our computers, our tablets, our music and pictures, and our bank accounts, why aren't we more concerned with cybercrime? Someone out there has the ability to wipe out a lifetime's worth of personal data from halfway across the globe. When it comes to internet crime, the criminals are way ahead of us, and they have been for years. Here to tell us more about this and maybe to give us a little bit of hope is Mark Goodman. He's the author of Future Crimes: Everything is Connected, Everyone is Vulnerable, and What We Can Do About It. He spent a career in law enforcement and technology and is the founder of the Future Crimes Institute. Mark joins us this morning from Silicon Valley. And thanks for your time, Mark. We sure appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. Happy to be with you.
Why are you so convinced that cyber criminals are so far ahead of the authorities out there, Mark?
Well, I guess it's based upon my own experience. As you mentioned, I spent a career in law enforcement. I started investigating cybercrime in the late 80s and early 1990s, so very, very early days. And even in those days, I saw that criminals were out innovating law enforcement when it came to tech. Fast forward to today, we're seeing them doing more of the same, except there's just a lot more tech in our lives.
At what point did you realize that criminals were embracing the online world, and when did law enforcement begin to catch on?
You know, it's funny. If you go back historically, the bad guys have always had better tech than the good guys. If you go back to the 1930s and look at, you know, gangland Chicago, they had getaway cars when the cops were still on foot and on horseback. So this has been going on for some time. I myself realized it as a young patrol officer when I saw gang members carrying pagers in the late 1980s at a time when only doctors were using them, right? So those, you know, street-level dope dealers were using mobile phones when they were 5 pounds long before any cop I knew had one. And if you fast forward to today, criminals not only are using mobile phones, but they're actually creating their own mobile phone networks like the ones in Mexico. They actually have a full-on parallel encrypted radio telecommunications network that extends to all 31 states. It's like Narcotel, where they don't have to worry about authorities going ahead and bugging them because they've built their own cell phone network.
And people out there right now are just shaking their heads. They almost can't believe what you just said. You know, in the first chapter of your book, you talk about the good old days of cybercrime when hackers were out to prove a point, or as you put it, for, you know, they would do things for laughs. Tell us about the transition that occurred over the next several years when hacking, you know, developed this much darker side.
Yeah, it's actually progressed into a full-on profession. So in those early days, most of the hackers were the sort of stereotypical younger kids who were doing it for the laughs, or as hackers call it, the lulls, L-U-L-D.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can break into this computer network. If you saw that movie War Games with Matthew Broderick, you know, he just wanted to play a cool game and ended up hacking into the Pentagon. So those were the early days of cybercrime, but fast forward today, criminals realize there's a lot of money to be made in cyber threats, and their chances of detection are low, and the money to be made is incredibly high, and so they are focusing on that. Today, a full 80% of hackers are now affiliated with an organized crime group, according to a study from the RAND Institute. So these are not just hackers that are doing it for the lulz anymore, they're doing it for the money, and the average age of a cyber criminal is now 35, not 16 or 17. So this is a business, this is a profession, and there are fully organized crime groups around the world that are engaging in this and making hundreds of millions of dollars.
And they're making that money, Mark, how?
Well, mostly by defrauding you and mm-hmm. your listeners and the good people. So they do any number of different ways. There's, you know, the standard cybercrime that people think of. When most people think of cybercrime, they think, my bank account was hacked, I'm a victim of identity theft or the like. But that's actually just a very narrow portion, a teeny portion of the cyber threats out there, yet the money is great because they can just defraud your bank account. One organization called Innovative Marketing Solutions, based out of Kiev, Ukraine, was a full-on cybercrime business. They had a three-story headquarters, they had a receptionist, they had an HR department, they had a quality assurance team. What was their product? Malware. So they were going out there and tricking people into buying antivirus software, except their antivirus software was really virus software. And they actually issued receipts to make it all seem legit. When the FBI and Interpol came in, they did a study and saw that after just 3 years, they had done $500 million in business and had nearly 600 employees. So this is fully organized.
But you're just taking my breath away here. You compare data these days to oil, saying that it's just that valuable. Explain that to us.
Sure. Well, that statement actually comes from the World Economic Forum, and you know they realize that the money is in the data. Why does Google or Facebook have the valuation that they do? It's because of the data on individual users that they can sell to third parties and monetize you. So there's tremendous value in the data.
And what's so explain that to me, though. What's valuable about knowing this information about me? How is that marketable?
Sure. That's a great question. Because they sell that data to advertisers. So if they drop a cookie, a little file on your hard drive after you search for an airline fare to Paris, now they know something about you that they can sell to marketers. Like, oh, you know, you want to go to Paris. Now you'll start seeing ads for hotels in Paris and tours of the Eiffel Tower and, you know, car services and all of that stuff. So it's much, much more refined targeting to advertisers. In the old days on television, and they used to use the Nielsen network. But now you can get so granular. So if I'm an advertiser that wants to go after 25-year-old males living in Kansas City to market my new first-person shooter video game, I can have excellent data on who those people are and target them, and with a much higher conversion rate. So that's how these companies make money. You know, we all think the internet is free, right? Facebook is free and Google is free, but Facebook isn't free. In a sense, you're not paying with cash, you're paying with your data. And that's why you get free status updates. And, you know, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg have billions of dollars because Facebook users are the largest unpaid workforce in the history of humanity. 1.3 billion people dutifully fill out their Facebook profiles, tag their friends and all their pictures, organize their social network, and do that for free for Facebook in exchange for status updates and likes, and Facebook gets the valuation out of it. So that's where the value is today. Data is the new oil, and because there's value in it, that's where criminals are going. You know, Willie Sutton, the famous bank robber in the 30s and 40s, when he was arrested by the FBI, the Bureau said to him, "Hey, Willie, tell us, why do you rob banks?" And he gave the perfect answer. That's where the money is, right? I rob banks because banks have the money. Today, the money is in the data, and that's why criminals are going after it.
Our guest is Mark Goodman. He's the author of Future Crimes. Everything is connected. Everyone is vulnerable, and what we can do about it. You know, hacking into a computer system, you say, is laughably easy. Just how easy is it? Because it doesn't seem that easy to most of us. I mean, a lot of people could imagine how to rob a bank, to use your last story, but not that many people would know how to hack into a computer system.
Right. Well, it's kind of laughable. You know, only the, I guess you'd say, mentally challenged are actually physically robbing banks today, because anybody who's got half a brain realizes that the average take from a physical bank robbery is about $4,300, according to the FBI. And the average cyber heist is well over $1 million. Plus, you can carry it out in your pajamas halfway around the world and don't have to worry about the FBI coming to knock on your door. The big mistake that most people make when they think about cyber threats is that they think that there are actually human beings behind most of these. But one of the biggest changes in cybercrime is that more and more cybercrime is being automated. So you don't need to be a master hacker anymore. There's actually software that commits crime. So you can buy a computer program like, Photoshop or Microsoft Word, except the goal of the program is not to edit photos or type letters to grandma. The goal of the program is to actually commit crime, and they have programs that will do identity theft, denial of service attack, industrial espionage. This type of software is called crimeware, and it's fully automated. When I was working with Interpol, we had a case down in Brazil, and we saw people selling DVDs in the favela, as the low-income neighborhoods outside of Rio, and we thought they were selling pirated movies. But when we got into it, we saw they were actually selling identity theft software, computer programs that would go ahead and commit identity theft. And what was fascinating is the programs actually came with service-level agreements. So the organized crooks were guaranteeing that 85% of their stolen credit cards would work, or the criminal would get their money back. And it even came with 800 tech support. So if you are a baby new cyber criminal and couldn't figure it out, you could call up tech support and say, "Hey, I'm trying to commit identity theft, and this isn't working." And they would say things like, "Well, sir, have you tried rebooting your computer?" So all the standard stuff that we see in real-world business, the criminals are doing all the same things.
So how vulnerable, then, are all of us, and how worried should we be, Mark?
Yeah, I think the challenge is we're way more vulnerable than we realize. I quote some statistics from the U.S. Secret Service and Verizon Business Services in the book. It turns out that when a company is hacked, the company detects it only 6% of the time. 94% of the time, it's because the FBI comes knocking at your door or because customers complain. The average time to detection in a Fortune 500 company from the time a hacker breaks in until the company notices it is 211 days. So for 7 months, the bad guys are roaming around in your computer system. That's at company, so you can imagine what happens to individual users. And 75% of corporate networks can be penetrated in just 15 minutes, according to that same report. So it's not just that we're open, we're way open. A lot of people will use tools like antivirus and say, well, I've got antivirus, I'm protected. But a meta study that I quote in Future Crimes actually looked at those antivirus programs, and they found for new cyber threats, they only have a 5% detection rate, which means that 95% of the viruses get through. I joke and say, if your own body's immune system worked like that, you know, you'd be dead in 24 hours. So we have really bad tools. The good news is there are things that we can do. So I think we're right to be concerned. We know what security looks like in the real space, right, in the real world. When we go out to work in the morning, we lock our front door, we don't leave it wide open. And when we take the car to the mall or the gym, we don't leave the car running with the keys and the windows down. We know how to protect ourselves. But most folks are still figuring out how to protect themselves in cyberspace. But inside my book, I actually have a checklist of 6 different steps that you can take. Mm-hmm. And based upon research done by the Australian government, if you take those 6 steps, you can reduce your own cyber risk by 85%. Hmm. It's just common sense stuff.
We're talking about cybersecurity, cyber hacking, all of that stuff. You know, Mark, again, I think folks might be wondering if human beings are smart enough to develop and create something like a computer and the internet and smartphones and all the things that we use today, why aren't we smart enough to develop systems that are invulnerable to these kinds of easy attacks, as you describe them?
Yeah, that's an outstanding question, and it basically comes down to what the military refers to as the asymmetric threat. The good guys need to be right every time in every single way, and the bad guys need to get through only one hole. So with tens of millions of lines of code in something like Microsoft Office, every single one of them needs to be perfect, and the bad guy only needs to find one flaw to get in. That being said, there's tremendous opportunities to up our game. Right now in the software industry, the motto is just ship it. You know, ship software is better than perfect software. And there's all this incentives financially to get your software out the door. And they don't really worry about all the software bugs that allow cyber criminals to do what it is that they do. But if Ford ever put out a car on the road that rebooted after, you know, 300 feet, you know, 4 times a day, people would go crazy. We wouldn't accept it. And yet we do with our software due to these so-called terms of service, right? We've all clicked the little box that said, I have read and agreed to the terms of service.
Yeah.
That's the biggest lie on the internet. Nobody reads those.
Yeah.
You know, PayPal's terms of service are 36,000 words. A study came out that said if you read all the terms of service that everybody was presented on an annual basis, it would take 78 days of your life reading 16 days, getting through all of those. So clearly companies know that. So they're not really terms of service. They're terms of abuse. And I think consumers should go ahead and take back some of the power. To your more important question about how do we build more resilient systems, look, we have tremendous opportunities to do this, right? We're the same people that put a man on the moon just a couple of decades ago. We figured that out. Surely if we figured that out, we can figure this out. We can figure out cybersecurity. The challenge is that we're not really paying attention. Industry's not paying attention. The government efforts are woefully behind. And so consumers and the general public are left to defend on their own.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we need to change, and that's what I call for in Future Crimes.
Well, let's talk about what is changing out there. I want to bring into our conversation Dr. Vijay Anand. He's the director of the new cybersecurity degree program at Southwest Missouri State. He joins us on the phone from campus in Cape Girardeau. And Dr. Anand, thank you for taking some time.
Thank you for having me. One thing is, I'm from Southeast Missouri State University, not Southwest.
Ah, Southeast, because Cape Girardeau is on the eastern side of the state. That's right. Well, you came, you know, what exactly is your program all about?
Our program is a comprehensive program which involves the software, hardware, and the network involves within the process of software development, deployment, and at the same time making sure the ethical and legal standards are held as we learn through the program or through the curriculum.
When you actually going to launch your program, VJ?
We have our program has been launched from 2011. We have graduated students out of our program, so it's now 3.5 years now. And we started at around 14 students, and we have somewhere close to 140 students in the program right now.
Wow. How much of a demand is there for your graduates?
Our graduates typically, once they are in the junior year, they get a lot of internship offers from local companies as well as national companies. But by the time they graduate, they at least have one job at hand. Most of them have at least two.
How unique is the program at Southeast Missouri State? I mean, do many other schools have the same similar programs, or are you guys sort of out on your own here?
When it was started, it was one of the few programs in the country to offer a degree in cybersecurity. In the state of Missouri, we are the only state university that offers a program like this. But there are some other private universities who have started a similar program in St. Louis that I'm aware of.
So, what do your students learn in the process of earning their degrees here?
As I was listening to Mark about the different kinds of aspects of a cyber infrastructure, we generally focus a lot of the times on network or software, and we forget about that it runs on a piece of hardware. So our program tries to encompass all these three things because the chain of trust can be broken at any of this point. They have to understand what are the vulnerabilities on software, what are the vulnerabilities on hardware, how do you protect something on hardware, and what are the things that you can do on the network, and what development process that you have to follow so that the quality of your system is of a high quality. The things that I stress a lot in my coursework is programming and secure programming. Secure programming, unfortunately, is not taught as much as it should be in education. And secure programming is critical for creating systems that are supposed to be resilient against attacks. Even when I say secure programming, it's not that you create something exotic. Even if you're creating an adder, you're creating a program that adds two numbers. You got to make sure that this addition program works under every circumstances, does not fail.
BJ, do you get concerned that you're teaching people tools that ultimately could be used against us?
Again, there is always a ethical issue when you teach tools like this. But you cannot just have this program in isolation without understanding what tools a hacker is going to use against you. The students are definitely aware of all the tools, and they participate in a competition called as Collegiate Cyber Defense Competition. They are aware of these tools, and they figure a way out how to protect against if an attack comes from such tools. But you have to add some trust on the student that they are doing the ethical thing
Right.
of not really using it against us. And we do stress a lot of that in our program. We
Right.
nobody in my program goes and gets into the coursework without signing an ethical agreement with me. I know it is not non-binding, but still they have to sign it.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I gather this is the kind of thing that we need to be doing. I have about 15 seconds left. This makes sense to you, Mark?
Makes great sense. Hats off to Dr. Anand and his university. We're going to have a shortage of 1 million cybersecurity professionals this year alone worldwide, according to Cisco. If I were a parent, I'd be putting my kid in these classes because they'll have a bright future and a job for life.
Well, I want to thank both of you. Mark Goodman is the author of Future Crimes: Everything is Connected, Everyone is Vulnerable, and What We Can Do About It. Mark, I sure appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Pleasure was mine.
Dr. Vijay Anand is the director of the cybersecurity program at Southeast Missouri State in Cape Girardeau. And Dr. Anand, thank you very much for your time.